For if we are faithful unto small things, we shall be made master over greater things. But to avoid the small and rush desperately after the greater is to fail completely. Having gained this external knowledge of life, having proven conclusively the ability to be a conscientious householder, which means for the most part that the individual was able to withstand all material temptations that might lure him away from the development of his own integrities. When he had this achievement and had brought his gift to the temple, then a career was directed for him. He was given the means to do those things which he was trained to do, because to the religious mind, there is no such a thing as secular learning. It makes no difference whether you are a carpenter or a priest. All is sacred. All usefulness is sacred. All uselessness is profane. Having therefore decided the area of service, the area of dedication, the individual becomes inwardly inspired to do the things which he has prepared himself to do. He started out with a determination to be prepared for a job worth living for. And this job unfolds with him. He doesn't have to have a very special attention bestowed by someone else. He doesn't have to take an aptitude test. He knows in his own heart, if he's dedicated, why he learned and what he intended to do with learning. And he uses it. And gradually, as a result of this, his inner life opens up. His inner life opens up because he has no pressures. He has no pressures because he has no egotism left in himself. He has no worldly ambitions. He is not trying to be godly on one hand and a millionaire on the other. He is simply, quietly, knowing his own limitations, knowing his own abilities, knowing his own purposes in life, and gradually gains a reputation. He gains a certain amount of influence because he is skilled and because he is able. As this continues along, then the quest of the over-self begins to be more meaningful. The individual, in order to have the courage and wisdom, must call more and more upon his own resources. As he advances in his skills, as he advances in his profession, his temptations increase correspondingly. He requires much greater self-discipline as he goes further and higher in his career. For there the temptations will be pressing. There will be many opportunities to compromise principles. The person with few abilities has few opportunities and few temptations. But as he goes further along, he demands and depends upon greater insights. Also, as he advances in any science or any art or any profession or trade, he gradually comes to the point where he wants to know more about the thing that he has already chosen. He can have graduated cum laude from the greatest university in the world, but he still will not understand history. He may have gone through philosophy for years, but he still will not understand all of philosophy. Before understanding is perfected, the inner life of the individual has to be given control of all faculties and powers. He must gradually learn the real mystery beyond and behind all material things. He will have to find gradually a consecration in which what might otherwise be a secular subject suddenly becomes sacred, and the person becomes completely dedicated to the perfection of his attained art or science. As this goes on, all knowledge becomes a key to the ultimate knowledge, of the divine plan itself. And by degrees, knowledge brings with it certitude. For ultimately, through skill, the individual develops the realization of the absolute workings of universal law. So as he goes on, it becomes then probably very important for him to have more and more communion with the source of life within himself. On the other hand, this communion is also a temptation. The individual who is interested in a religious life is very often disillusioned in secular living. He feels that the world around him is simply an impediment, that he becomes more and more aware that he has difficulty adjusting to worldly conditions. They hurt him. They irritate and aggravate him. And he wishes constantly that he could do the things that would change all this. But he can't accomplish all that, nor should he be disturbed by the fact that the world is the way it is. He may do all he can to help it, but he cannot wisely condemn it for its own shortcomings. The world continues to be itself, and the wise and dedicated person must live in it, must conquer its pressures in himself, and must dedicate his own life to the service of whatever reforms or reformations of character he is able to accomplish. Under such conditions, he may want occasionally to have periods of meditation or quietude or rest or opportunity to organize his resources against the confusions of his time. But he will never take the attitude that he is going to substitute his own hope for personal growth for his duty to society. The individual who retires from humanity to take care of his own spirituality is on the rim of a serious disaster. We are not here primarily to advance our own cause by the neglect of our social responsibilities. We are here to forget ourselves very largely in the common service of those whose need is greater than our own. Therefore, the individual who chooses to retire from humanity in order to protect his own spirituality should give the matter another thought. He is on the wrong track. He is not to be concerned primarily with his own growth. His own growth is a byproduct. The only way the individual can grow spiritually is to forget himself in the service of those whose need is greater than his own. He cannot directly make himself spiritual, but he can, through forgetting himself in service, attain spirituality. But he will never find it by demanding it, requiring it, or envisioning it for himself primarily. We are not here as human beings to think only of ourselves. We are here to forget ourselves. And in the beginning of our spiritual growth, the less we think about ourselves, the more we will unfold the natural resources with which we are endowed. Thus, when we come face to face with literature in these fields, where we find offer after offer telling us how we can become spiritual, how we can become rich, how we can gain influence over others, these statements in themselves should tell that we're on the wrong track, because no individual has ever found his way to heaven by taking care of himself. He has found it by dedicating his life to the service of that power which alone can command, and that power is the power to serve those around him. And from small services, he can increase to greater services. But always his mind is upon one thing, the greater good to the greater number. Otherwise, he is going to fall into some form of psychic malpractice very, very quickly. Having finally come to the conclusion that most of his efforts have been comparatively wasted, it is necessary for him to also give a certain amount of discriminational thinking to any group of people with whom he wishes to have intimate association. If he wants to join some movement, he has a perfect right to do so. But for his own good, he must estimate as far as he possibly can the integrities of any groups with which he may become involved or desire to be. He should be very careful not to permit himself to be lured into some association on the basis that it is going to advance his own personal interest. It is not fair and not right for the person to develop extrasensory perceptions in order that he may deceive his neighbors. Nor should he gain a clairvoyant ability so he can find out how to foreclose a mortgage on the widows and the fatherless. These things are black magic in every sense of the word. The use of spiritual power to defraud or to debase or to injure or to damage anyone else is something that no sincere person would contemplate even for a moment. And yet, without realizing it, we can be lured into these things by very elaborate propaganda, by all kinds of promises, and in some cases, a few threats. But avoid all of this type of thing. Otherwise, you will be in trouble all the time. Now, there are a great many people who are going to do wonderful things in this world without the development of extrasensory faculties. The possibility of having growth without some form of psychic experience is very real and very important. Some persons will have extrasensory perceptions, and some have almost been born with the potential to this. Under such conditions, their problem is to control and direct these faculties, to serve them, to serve the public good, to serve others in need, to advance religious purposes and causes, or to add to the security of those around them. But it is not necessary to have this type of experience. Some of the greatest saints and mystics of all times have never had visions. They have never had any metaphysical experience. They have had a simple religious dedication. They have simply built their lives around the New Testament, or the Old Testament, or the Sermon on the Mount. They have gone along day by day, serving gently and quietly in the cause of principles. These people have had a constant unfoldment which is not necessarily accompanied by miraculous happenings. They have gained insights, they have become wiser and wiser, but they have not seen things or had symbols that they couldn't understand. They have rather simply grown up in wisdom and in charity and faced the future with a good hope. Now, the symbol problem gets to be very complicated. And in the course of time, we get symbolic documents almost without end. These symbols people see, they think they believe them, they have a feeling that those things have happened. Whether they are visions or dreams or extrasensory experiences, they do not know, but they expect someone else to describe, interpret, and explain these symbols. Actually, in most cases, there is no way in which this is possible. The nearest possible way would be to go into analytical psychology and have these symbols explained in terms of a Jungian analysis or something of that nature. But this is a long and difficult problem and requires a great deal of time and thought and effort, and today, considerable expense. These symbols are personal. They mean something to the person who receives them. And these symbols are their own psychic pressures geometrized. They are pictures of their own pressures and their own attitudes. You remember, of course, Aesop's fables. Well, the fables were symbols of human behavior. Fontaine's fables the same way. The emblem writers and symbolists of the 17th and 18th centuries in Europe dramatized attitudes by means of pictures. They created symbols to represent the attitudes, the virtues, the vices, the practices, the beliefs, the opinions, and the fallacies of human nature. Every symbol, therefore, that is experienced in a dreamlike relationship with life is some expression of the pressure in ourselves. These pressures do not come back always as literal recapitulations of things that happened. They come back as diagrams. They come back as symbolic figures telling something about happenings within ourselves. Some of these figures could be musical notes. Sound can carry the message. Words can carry it. Thoughts, scenes, landscapes, persons, animals, geometrical figures, stars, auras, magnetic fields, all these things come through into consciousness, usually in a semi-dream state. They come through sometimes because the individual has conditioned themselves to get them. In other words, they may come through in concentration, in meditation, and in various forms of self-discipline. The danger of these things is that they are not understood. And the individual, having experiences of this kind, which he cannot interpret himself, then turns to someone else to have it explained for him. No one else can explain it. It is something that is intimately associated with one individual. It is a principle, a truth, an idea, an attitude, or a negative pattern which is unique to that person. And that person will have to try and explain it. If the symbols are morbid, if the situation is negative, then it means that the psychic pressure is very, very heavy. Sometimes these symbols are simply mathematical figures of the attitude the person is now trying to take. For instance, if he is in contemplation, if he is in meditation, if he's idealistically searching for something, the very mood itself which is moving him becomes symbolized. It may be that he is hoping that some good thing will happen, dedicated and very serious, so he sees light. He sees luminous things, which are the evidences of his own effort to become enlightened. The symbol may be only his own attitude at the moment, pictured mathematically or diagrammatically. Or it may be an accumulation of pressures within himself. But whatever it is, it means what it means to him. And the constant effort to have it explained is more or less useless. However, he will get all kinds of explanations if he approaches different people. Each may try to tell him what they think it means. But when they tell him what they think it means, what they are really telling is what it would mean to them if it had occurred to them. In other words, the symbol would be interpreted in terms of the person who is interpreting it, not in the person to the person to whom it first appeared. Therefore, in religious symbolism, much of it is derived from scripture. Much of it is taken from religious and philosophical art and sources. But always the symbolism is determined by what it means to the person who sees it at that moment or under those conditions. And one thing you can say, if these symbols are attractive and beautiful and pleasant, then the individual has achieved a certain harmony within himself. But he even has to be careful of this, because the primary purpose of all of this discipline is not simply physical or mental pleasure. It has to have to do with great and deep realities. And it must go deeper than satisfying the mind or the emotions. It must be a true expression of the internal life of the individual. So we go through all of these problems, and we find everywhere today a tremendous increase of pressureful symbolism. We find every day, practically, some new prediction appears in the press. Some new threat, usually. Most predictions today are negative, largely because the person doing the predicting feels negative themselves. If the person is afraid and he has a mystical experience or thinks it's that, it may be simply a fear experience. If the person is frustrated, it may be a frustrate experience. If it involves society, it may be revengeful, or it may be an effort to stand against the prevailing policy. But in every instance that we know of in recent times, the trend has been to represent the whole subtle subconscious of the human race as under tremendous anxiety, under great stress and fear. Therefore, a prophecy of doom, an effort to date a disaster, is very often wishful thinking. And time again, the disaster does not occur as dated, because the dating ties into something within the consciousness of the person and has been expanded to cover all society. Actually, the answer lies in the gradual correction of these ills by which the individual is personally under pressure and stress. Actually, however, if you think for a moment, you will realize that about the only way in which the present condition can be finally solved is for it to become unendurable. As long as there is an opportunity for the individual to do as he pleases, when he doesn't please to do the right thing, and get away with it, there will be no change in the social pattern. We will only have correction when it becomes obvious that there is no other answer. We will continue to exploit each other. We will continue to dramatize our own attitudes and commercialize our own theologies as long as this is possible, as long as it is within our capacity to endure the consequences of our own misdeeds. Therefore, the quicker things come to a head, the better off we will all be. I remember a man who I talked to back in 29 when we had the big crash in the stock market. He lost everything he had one day. He was wiped out completely. He had been margining, as so many had, and it caught him, and he was through. A few hours before, he'd been a wealthy man. Now he was a bankrupt. I talked with him, and I said, "What did you do when you found out you just lost everything you had?" Well, he said, "You'd be surprised what I did. I went home and went to bed, and I slept for the first time in 6 months." Now, society is going to be faced with this kind of situation. It is only when something happens and we no longer can escape the consequences of our own mistakes that we can go home and have a good night's sleep. It's only possible to solve these problems by changing our own ways of life. And it's the same with the person who has a bad home life, who has children that are wayward, and consequently is loaded with psychic pressures and extroverts them through strange dreams and symbols. We're going to have these prophecies of dire circumstances until we stop setting up dire circumstances. We're going to fear for what we have as long as we are so tied to possession that the loss of it becomes the major tragedy in life. When society does make its major moves, as it must someday, it does not mean that people will all be wiped out. It means actually that people will begin to value what is truly valuable and will be able to sleep well. The Chinese had a saying that in the primary time of things, when there were only sages upon the earth, the sages all slept without dreams. And this is to a certain degree our problem. It is the pressure in ourselves that is not only luring us into difficulties, but also luring us into finding false panaceas, trying to find ways to get out of our troubles without changing ourselves. And there are always a certain number of persons willing to exploit this need. But when it's all said and done, they may make a quick profit, but the person who is over-influenced by them is still in the same difficulties. So I think it's very important in connection with all types of this kind of situation for the person to remain rather quiet and make certain rules and plans which he can follow. If you are interested in an organization of some nature or a group, do not allow yourself to be lured in on the ground of what it's going to do for you. Rather, take the attitude that if you become associated with that organization, that you can do something constructive for them. Do not join to get, join to give. In a philosophy of life, do not center yourself upon a teaching of how you can be superior to other people. I'd rather take the attitude of trying to gain a knowledge which will enable you to help other people to be superior to what they are now. If you are interested in health, or if you're interested in harmony of home life and so on, learn or understand the principles behind these things. If you expect a more happy home, do the things to make it. Do not depend upon some trick. If you happen to have relatives that belong to different religions, this sometimes is a terrible situation. It can be very difficult. But the only answer to it for each person involved is to realize that we all have the right to follow the ideals that are closest to us. We have a right to have the religions in which we were born if we want them. No one should accuse us of being better or worse because of a religion. We should all do what the American Indian did, observe the person, and if his conduct was good, his religion is right. Don't go any further. Never question the right of individual to his faith, but look for those who live what they believe. They are the sincere ones. You are inclined, maybe, to the same problem. You may be trying to save somebody from the error of his religions. Don't do it. Help him to understand his own, and hope that he will help you to understand your own. But if you do help him to understand his, you're liable to find out a lot about your own. All these things work right back to practical common sense, and not to some strange beliefs. And do not fall back into the witchcraft of the Middle Ages. Do not try to change people in spite of themselves or without their knowledge. Do not follow all of these strange systems that are now gaining vogue, and some of which are already in tragic difficulties. Be very slow to affiliate unless you are able to examine carefully, study thoroughly, and understand fully what is involved. A very important thing is to find out the source of beliefs. If you have a belief that is interesting to you, and it depends upon a revelation of some kind, it is your right and privilege to thoroughly understand that revelation. You have a right to know where any teaching originated. And if an organization refuses to tell you, then be careful. And if it comes from some source that nobody can explore, be still more careful. Because under those conditions, there is nothing that you can depend on except the validity of the revelation itself. And if this revelation is unselfish, helps you to grow to be a better person, promises you nothing but hard work, and very little opportunity to get into trouble. If it is a dedication to the public good, you can give it another thought. But if it's something that is supposed to make you better than somebody else who hasn't got the entitlement to this revelation, be very careful. Because we cannot hope to allow faith to create a delusion or support one. We have no need to believe what is incomprehensible to us. We have no right to believe without question that which is concealed from us by other people. And in doubt, stay yourself. Be yourself. Try to grow according to your own light. Serve, study for yourself. Base your philosophy upon those teachings that have stood the test of ages. Recognize that in this universe, we are going to be here for a while, then we're not going to be here, and then we may be here again. If there's any part of the invisible world that we ought to know about, we'll be there to see it one of these days. And we'll also come back with a better insight as to what to do. Do not permit other people to over-influence you away from a natural, normal, Christian understanding of life, a simple, honorable integrity. Anything that takes you away from this is liable to get into trouble. So don't also ask other people to interpret your symbols. If these symbols are valid, there are excellent texts available on them. The symbol always is a mandala. It is always a meditation figure. If a symbol is presented to you under mystical conditions of some nature, it is your privilege to find in yourself the key to that symbol. It is given you for your own growth. And when you try to get everyone else to tell you what it means, you will not find out what it actually means, because its meaning to you is very personal. And one of the ways in which ancient instruction was given was by means of impressing symbols upon consciousness. Symbols that tell you all the things you need to know if you will quietly accept them. But when you get a symbol that is interesting, don't feel that it is something very, very wonderful and cosmically meaningful. Say, what does it mean to me now, here, and with the problems I now face? Is it a symbol of hope? Is it a symbol of faith? Is it a symbol of charity? Is it a symbol of discipline? All of these things you have to consider. Many symbols, especially light symbols, are encouragements telling you that something is being accomplished. Something is being changed for the better within yourself. But do not under any conditions get all upset over the symbol and figure that perhaps you are on the very verge of cosmic consciousness. Take the symbol for what it is, try to understand it, and as you unfold your own simple contemplation of it, other symbols will probably come along to help you to understand its full meaning. Be very moderate in your aspirations. Be gentle and kind, and try to use the faculties of the inner life for the good of your community and your world. Also, never permit your interest in the greater things to cause you to overlook the simple daily responsibilities of life. Somewhere for each of us, the self must die. And until the self can die, the divine cannot be clearly manifested through our natures. We are not going to be ourselves as persons with divine powers. We are going to gradually relax those divine powers into our natures. We will cease to be aggressive persons. We will be pens in the hand of a ready writer. We will be the instruments of a divine purpose, and our end is not our fulfillment of our own purposes, but our gradually acceptance and living of the divine purpose for all living things. In those days, there will be great changes in this world, but they will all be good changes. In the meantime, do not allow yourself to use religion to gratify selfishness, gratify personal ambitions, or gratify a sensational desire for some kind of a mystery. Use what you understand and what you believe for the good of all concerned. Be very quiet, be very gentle, and be slow to assume anything that you do not understand. Take it easy, and in the course of time, you will be rewarded. You will be rewarded, but remember the words of St. Paul. Try the spirits. Test them. When anything is done along mystical lines that is supposed to have certain outcomes, see whether it does or not. See if promises are fulfilled. See if what you were told was happen will happen. If it doesn't happen, then you have a perfect right to withdraw your confidence. Always test the spirits, test the messages. And where you find they are inaccurate or do not fulfill themselves, recognize this immediately and, gathering yourself up, depart from that particular illusion. Try to keep the mind practical, honest, straight, and do not allow mysticism to confuse you. It should not confuse, it should clarify. It should help you to have the faith in things unseen, but it does not justify your accepting exploitation or mysteries that are incomprehensible to you. Faith is basically the belief that there is a divine power in life. That which we earn will come to us. That which we deserve will be ours. And that which we build for, we will attain if we have built correctly and the goal is right. In this simple way, study, learn, work, and have all the happiness of realizing the importance of a constructive dedication. With this kind of thinking, you can't get into very much trouble. Well, I guess that's it.